Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts, typically with a focus on Kenpo. But today, this is a bonus episode, and I'm quite excited to have someone I've known for actually quite a while. But in my capoeira life, so he is known as a Vagalume, now a Contramestre, which is I'm still still in shock to see. Just because I'm not used to it, not that he doesn't, not that he doesn't deserve it, but you know we'll get into that more. But yeah, so we're gonna talk some capoeira today. It may be kind of for my listeners that are not familiar with capoeira. We may get into some things that you're not quite familiar with, but you know we'll figure it out as we go along. So. So we'll just kind of go from there. So I usually start things off with just kind of giving a little brief background of my history, and I will just keep it brief in just saying that you know I have advanced ranks in Kenpo and in capoeira, and then I've also done some taekwondo and some hapkido and some boxing. And you know we'll kind of get into it more as we go along, but I'm gonna turn it over to our esteemed guest today. And yeah, if you could go ahead and this is gonna be kind of interesting for me because even though we've known each other for a while, I actually don't really know your story. So yeah, if you could tell me and our listeners. How capoeira found you, how you got started, and we'll just kind of go from there.
All right. First of all, I want to thank you for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity. I don't have the most exciting of stories. It wasn't like Moses came down from the mountain or anything like that. The only thing is, I think... I don't know if this is true in other martial arts. I don't train other martial arts, but in capoeira, it seems that the art kind of mines desires out of the soil of people's souls. So if you have these things in you, there's capoeira finds those things and draws you to it based on those things. So, for example, when I was in high school, all my friends were in gymnastics. I was not in gymnastics. And so if you know people in gymnastics, they are crazy strong. They've got amazing strength and flexibility and grace. And I was always a little jealous of that, but they had been doing it so long that by the time I got the self-confidence to even try it, there was no way that I was going to even be able to compete at the high school level. So there's that. I've always also wanted to speak other languages. And I was embarrassed to be an American that only knew one language. And so all that being said, when I was in my late 20s, one of my cousins was living in Phoenix, and I called her, and she was like, oh, I do capoeira now, and it's so great. It done the music, and you would love it. You should try it. And I hadn't heard of it before, and the internet isn't what it is now. So you could look things up, but you couldn't like watch videos, or there was no YouTube. I'm dating myself, I know. So I went to a class, and they were playing drums, and I was percussionist in high school. That's part of the reason why I couldn't get into a lot of sports because it overlapped with the band season. And so there were drums there, and I was like, oh, I play drums. That's a cool thing. And then they start moving around, and they can do handstands and walk on their hands, things like that. And that I thought that was amazing. That so that touched that little gem inside my soul where it's like, I've always wanted to do that too. And then they start singing in a different language. And I was like, wow, I've always wanted to learn another language. So all these things I found in Capoeira, on the first day when I went, there was no Capoeira in my city. And I was able to look up on the internet, the closest class, which was in Las Cruces, New Mexico, about an hour away from where I live. And so I drove over there and I walked in, and it was at the time, Professor Animal, he's now Contramestre. He was teaching the class, and he had this energy where he was just excited. Like, we're going to go, come on, everyone. We're going streaking, that kind of energy. And, so I liked that. And then you look around the class, and there was, you know, college girls there. And, one was Caucasian, a dancer, and crazy graceful. One was of Mexican descent and also an amazing dancer and very strong. Another one was Native descent, had hair to her waist, and was real quiet but could do amazing things. Like, watching Capoeira for the first time, I was like, these people are strong, they're excited, they're happy to be here, and they're beautiful. This is a place I want to stay. And so we did the class where we go up and down. He's like, try this and try that and try this. And that was about an hour and a half of that. And I was soaked in sweat. I was completely drenched. I was tired. And then they're like, okay, so let's play some Capoeira now. And I was like, what have we been doing for the last hour and a half, man? Like, what was all that? That wasn't Capoeira? And so then the joda started, and I jumped in and just tried to do the things that we were doing up and down the class. And then it ended, and he was like, man, you did good. A lot of people don't get in the joda the first time. And I thought, I had an option. I didn't know that there was an option to not. You just said go. And so but ever since then, I was addicted. I thought this is what I need. So I use it as an excuse to learn another language and to better myself physically. And it gives me the opportunity to travel now. And I love traveling, and I love percussion, and so, yeah, every aspect of it I really enjoy.
Very nice. I love that you had that similar experience. So I usually, you know, tell people that you know, when I got started in Capoeira, I like many Capoeira practitioners, I saw the movie The Only the Strong and was like, okay, yeah, I need that in my life. And I started seeking out Capoeira, and you know, unfortunately couldn't find it, or at least I couldn't get started into it until quite some years later. But I, you know, got involved in Kenpo Karate and was doing that for a few years. And then when I finally got to Capoeira, you know, those kind of first couple classes, doing all this work, drenched in sweat, and it's like, okay, you know, that was the warm up. Now we're going to start class. It's like, wait a second, what? We haven't started class yet. Like, I'm already. This is, you know, a warm up in Capoeira is by far harder than any of the hardest, you know, sparring classes that I've had in kind of any of the other arts I've. Dealt with. So I like to see that I'm not alone in that in that aspect. So you were not, you're not a martial artist. Didn't have any other kind of aspirations for martial arts before getting into capoeira at all.
I had looked, I did taekwondo maybe for about a year, until it started to feel like I was paying for a belt, which one time in particular, the sensei was saying that I needed to learn this certain kata to move up, and so then I would practice it, and I didn't get it. Like when it came down to test, like I completely blanked, and I didn't do any of it right. Like I did the first level kata, and then I started the second level with where I was supposed to be, and then like blanked. And then he was like, no, don't worry. You paid, right? And I said, yeah, I paid. And then he was like, okay, here's your belt. And I was like, I don't feel like I really earned this. Like I didn't learn the thing you told me to do. And so that was that. And then my mom had put me in karate after I got into a fight in elementary school. And so I went to one or two karate classes when I was, I don't know, maybe 10. And we had to spar with, there were girls in the class, and they put me up against this girl. And we were supposed to spar, but all I could hear was my mom's voice saying, you know, never hit a woman, never hit a girl. You're not supposed to hit a girl. And they're like, okay, go. And I remember having this cognitive disconnect, just like, okay, you've just put me in a ring, or like, and I'm supposed to hit this girl, but my mom told me never to hit a girl. So like, what's up? And needless to say, she wiped the floor with me, and I told my mom after that, nope, don't want to do karate. It just doesn't make any sense. Gotcha. Which is interesting now, because in capoeira everybody is pretty much equal. So like, it doesn't matter your weight class. There could be a female across from you that's a third your size, and you're both supposed to interact in the game equally. And that's another aspect of capoeira that I like, that we don't separate people, and there's no need, because we're not really supposed to make contact.
Yeah. There's the community aspect is, you know, one of the things that I love about the art, and the cooperation and the connection. And you know, so we like to say in the Hoda, you know, the capoeira is a conversation between the people that are in the circle, that are you know, playing together and working with each other. It's not just that we're there to just, you know, show off our fancy moves, but we're you know, non-verbally communicating with each other. And so yeah, I really love that aspect of it. So
and I said we're not supposed to make contact. I should clarify, we're not supposed to make physical contact, but you are supposed to make a connection with the other person and have an interaction on a certain level using your physical body, but that's completely different than just striking somebody with your foot.
Gotcha. Yeah, well said, and I agree with that 100%. So, you started taking the classes, and so were you still, you know, making that drive to Las Cruces when, you know, all the time when you got training, or were you able to find anything a little bit closer to you?
There was nothing. El Paso, even now, is kind of the type of city that if you see something new or up and coming, you'll most likely not find it in El Paso. So either you'll have to do it yourself and make it happen, or you'll have to sit down and be patient and wait for it to show up in 5 years. And so I drove from El Paso to Las Cruces for the first about 2 years of my Capoeira journey, and it was fine. I mean, I didn't mind making the drive because I really enjoyed the classes. But what was annoying is that it was in a college that I did not go to. And so sometimes there'd be things going on in the college, and I'd make the drive and, oh, we don't have a place to train. Or they would have communicated with themselves beforehand, before I got there, and decided that they were going to cancel class. And so then I would drive the hour just to find a piece of paper on the door saying, oh, we canceled class. And that was annoying. But it didn't stop me. I didn't let it discourage me. And then the teacher, Professor Animal, graduated from the college, and he got a job in a different city. So he was going to leave, and he was going to leave the group in the hands of some of his students. And his students had maybe 18 months longer training than I had. And so when he left, or when he was about to leave, I asked if I could keep a group together in El Paso instead of making the drive to train with these guys that only have a few months more than me. And he said yes. He said, yeah, you keep the group going. If you get a steady group and a place to train, then the mestres will send a mestre to your city and you can train there in El Paso. And I thought, well, that's cool. I can do admin stuff. So that's the whole reason why I started teaching Capoeira, was to keep a group together for them to send a mestre to my city. And it was many years, over a decade later, that I realized that that's not how it works. And the mestre never showed up. But by then I had already committed myself psychologically to the art. So here we are. Now there is a contramestre here, but it just happens to be me.
Yeah, no. I love that. I love that your story, your situation is kind of similar to mine, in that you know, when I started, I had about, I don't know, maybe 6 months, maybe a year into the training. It was probably closer to like 6 months in the training. And, you know, I would show up to class and the instructor would not be there. And, you know, the rest of us in the class were kind of standing around looking at each other like, okay, who's going to teach the class? And there was a guy in the group that he had maybe 6 months, a year more training. No, it was definitely less than a year worth of training more than me. And we'd kind of look at each other and he would be like, well, I'm not interested in late in the class. And so it's like, well, I'm the one that has the most experience, so I guess I'll try and, you know, lead something. And you know, since I had the karate background, many of those early classes that I would kind of run, you know, we'd do a little bit of capoeira, and then kind of the rest of it would be you know, karate kicking drills, because that's what I knew. So had a little kind of a karate capoeira situation going. But you know, and then the instructor would come back, and you know, things would be fine. And then the next summer would roll around, and he was very very much I'm trying to think of, at a loss for the word at the moment, but he's very had a very relaxed attitude about things. And yeah, he would just kind of take off and, you know, live, have that wonderful summer. But he would not tell anybody that he was leaving, and he would not respond to any calls or texts or emails. So, you know, once again, I would find myself, oh, I guess I'm leading the class. And so that, you know, kind of happened quite a bit more and more over the years. And kind of similar, you know, trying to, you know, we had a good group going. So, you know, I just kind of did it, whatever I could to kind of keep things going. And, you know, had a talk with the maestres, and, you know, they're like, oh, well, you know, we'll kind of help you out, you know, keep doing your thing, and we'll kind of help you out where we can. And so they kind of kept a watchful eye, but yeah, didn't really kind of send anyone out. But so I can definitely relate to that. But
yeah, in retrospect, I kind of wish that I would have humbled myself a little bit and just kept driving, because those guys, even though they had 18 months more than me, they were young and agile, and they're amazing. And some of them still come around, and I wonder what sort of a caporista I would be today if I had just continued to train with them instead of coming out on my own. But you can't do redos in life. So,
well, yeah. You know, I look at it as you know, things kind of happen the way they happen because they need to happen that way. So, like, looking at my journey, you know, had I found a capoeira school in San Diego where I'm from, I don't think I would have, you know, met kind of the same people that I've met and had some of those experiences. And, you know, I like to say that, you know, capoeira finds you. I think that, capoeira wasn't ready for me at the time that I originally wanted to start. And I needed to have whatever those particular life experiences to then get, you know, get started in it. So, you know, even though you wanted to, you know, maybe train with those guys, more, the universe, you know, capoeira was like, no, that's not your path. You need to be on this path. So, I look at it that way. So I think it worked out. You're doing pretty good, pretty good where you're at. So, I think it worked out in the right right fashion.
It has. It also helped me when I first started. I was, like I said, in my late 20s. I met my now wife shortly after that, and we found out we're gonna have a child coming soon, and so she was moving from the city she was in, and she was going to come move in with me at the time. And it was a pretty scary time, honestly. Like, I didn't know, you know, is this relationship going to work out? I didn't know if I had what it takes to be a good dad, because I didn't have any sort of example for that growing up. And capoeira gave me the space that I needed at that time, because there was a lot of change happening in my household. And I could say, oh, when things got too much, I'd say, oh, wait, I got to work on the 501c3, or, oh, you know, I really got to work on the financials for capoeira. And it, outside of just training and giving myself a physical outlet, it also allowed me a legitimate excuse to make space when I found myself stressed at home. And right off the bat, it kind of created a balance. Like, I could be with the family, and then I would purposely carve out time for Capoeira, and then vice versa as the family situation worked out, and we had more and more kids, and like it's been great. The relationship ended up working out great. Then I would carve time out of Capoeira to spend time with the family. You know, it kind of switched, but it's always, Capoeira's always been there for me to help be a counterbalance to the other things going on. And I'm really appreciative of that.
Yeah, finding that balance, that, work-life balance, Capoeira life, you know, and just martial arts in general life balance is, it can be tricky sometimes, you know. In my situation, you know, my wife, you know, is very supportive of all my endeavors, but you know, sometimes when it's like, okay, I'm heading to class, I kind of get a little bit of the look, like like really, like you've already, you know, done stuff this week, and you know, kind of like to have you around the house, but you know, she's very supportive, and things are good, so it's like, oh well, I'm going to karate, or I'm going to Capoeira, or you know, we work it out. So now, so kind of. Martial, oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, martial arts is a little demanding. It can be demanding if that's something that you're making a major part of your life, and it's different than say basketball or football in that it doesn't have a season that starts and stops, and so you sort of have to make your own season. And it's easy when you're dealing with something that you love so much to spend all your time doing it, where like in Capoeira, you can take the 2 hours to train, and then you can come back and do a Portuguese lesson, and then you can crack open a book about the history of Capoeira in Brazil in general, and like you, if you wanted to, you could spend all your time just focusing on that, or putting an instrument together, or carving out, you know, a gourd, or making a cachixi, or playing the birimbau. Like you can make it your life. So anybody in any martial art needs to pick their season, needs to find out, okay, like in Capoeira, we have the Jinga, where you start the basic movement and you try to keep your movement and your flow no matter how the kicks come or when the kicks come. Same thing, you want to find your Jinga in the season of Capoeira. Like you don't want to make it a sprint and burn yourself out and then say, ah, screw this, it's taking up too much of my life, I don't want to do this anymore. And so you got to really find out, okay, how much is too much, how much is too little. There's going to be certain times of the year that you probably do it more than other times. There's going to be certain times of the week that you dedicate more time or less time. But it's important to sit down and really find what works for you, because I don't know about other types, but there's a lot of people in Capoeira that are amazing, just amazing, and you see them go hard for years, and either their body breaks down and they can't do the art anymore, or they decide that, oh, this is too much, I can't travel, or I can't talk to the mestres, or my family is yelling at me. They say I'm spending too much time away, and then they stop, you know, and then you see this like kind of wasted potential of a capoeirista that has a lot that they could share and pass on, but because they didn't choose their season correctly, they didn't balance their life in the right way, it blew them out. And it's always sad to see, especially those that you know are a lot better than you or have aspects or in points of view of the martial art that you think could really enrich students see them just not show up anymore, it's kind of heartbreaking. But that's one of the things that I had decided a little while ago. Like, there's, I may not be the fastest, I may not be the strongest, I may not be the best teacher, but one thing I can do, one thing I can control, is I can just decide not to stop. You know, I can still be there, like the gum underneath your shoe, no matter how hard you try to scrape me off.
Yeah, the consistency is the consistency and just being there, you know, sticking with it is huge. You know, I've told people over the years, like, you know, there's those days when I didn't want to get off the couch to go to class. Those were most of the best times I've ever had in Capoeira, were the days where I didn't want to go, but I just took that little ounce of energy to get off the couch and get in the car and go to class. And then it's, you know, it's the best time ever. So yeah, be able to still stick with it in the low times and, you know, it really makes the difference. And, you know, getting over to the teaching side of it. Yeah. I've many times done the, you know, drive an hour to a place where, you know, I'm going to be leading a class and show up and there's nobody there or one person. And it's like, you know, just gotta make it work and keep with it. So yeah, that's
definitely important. Those times you got to fight through, because there's, especially you're starting your own group or starting any business, it's a feast or famine sometimes. Like, a lot of people don't understand how much it takes to just keep showing up, even when you're the only one showing up. But thankfully, if you keep at it and keep working, your work pays off and these other people start seeing your vision.
Gotcha. So now, so for the listeners that are not familiar, so your title is that you are a contramestre, and for the people that are not familiar, that is quite up there in the food chain of rank. I'm not really sure how to equate it to like a capoeira, or excuse me, a kempo rank, but I guess it would be kind of close to, I don't know, let's say maybe like a second or third degree black belt in the kempo world. So, you know, you've been a contramestre for a little while now, and has it kind of sunk in that you're up there at this point, or you still kind of wake up in the morning and it's like, oh, you know, holy crap, I'm a contramestre. It's like,
it's an interesting thing. It's mostly in my head. I've decided, because you dedicate your life to this art or your time to this thing, and you want to be recognized for the time that you put in, because I mean, you put in that time, you could have been doing something else. And whatever that something else would have been, you would have wanted to be acknowledged in that thing too. And so on one end, it's really nice to be recognized by your community as we see you, we see all the time that you've put into this. And so that is great. And then when the ceremony is over, the bachizado is done, you go home, you realize that it's that you're still you. You know, nothing's changed, really. Like, yeah, maybe people are calling you something different, but, like, I still am going to have to, you know, go teach class and print another flyer and think about another way to get the word out in my city. And, oh, should I do this Facebook ad, or does it make sense to get on TikTok and start doing something there? You know, like, it's all nothing after the ceremony, after everyone's saying, hey, good job, man. You realize that that's the same. It's instead of saying, wow, it's not like crossing a finish line of a race, because you run a race and you cross the finish line, you stop. You know, this is like more like seeing a mile marker, you know, like, hey, you're contramestre now. But then you see it and you say, yeah, I made it to this far. And then you keep running. You gotta keep going. So it's been interesting when it comes to traveling to other cities too. You kind of have, I can't speak for anybody else, but I sort of had like a imposter syndrome for a little while, where I feel like, okay, I'm going to this other city. They train capoeira, but they're not in my group. So are they going to really accept me as a contramestre? They don't know me. They don't know my trajectory. They're going to judge my game in this way or that way. And I'm coming to find out that at least all the groups that I've gone through, like, capoeiristas are just cool, man. They're they're some of the greatest people that I've met. And I know it's impossible to put a blanket statement out there, and because we know that there's always those bad apples here and there, but for the most part, like, every group that I've gone to, they see me and they say, oh, you're contramestre. They haven't said, okay, well, we're going to see how good of a contramestre you are. It hasn't been like that. It's more of a, oh, we see that whatever community you've come from has given you this recognition, and we trust that community. And it also helps being in a group with somebody who's as talented and world-renowned as Mestre Acordeon. When people see that you're in a group that was started by Mestre Acordeon, and they know him, they know Mestre Sueli, and they see your rank, they do not question him. You know, like, if I walked in the room, I expect people to question me, but nobody in our art would ever question Mestre Acordeon. And if they did, the people that do question him, or like question his judgment, what they do is they pick up the phone and they call him and they'd be like, Mestre, what's up with this?
Exactly.
Because, yeah, if you're on the level with Mestre Acordeon where you can say, hey, I have an issue with the way you're thinking about that. And he loves people to challenge his way of thinking. He doesn't think everybody should think like him. The people that are there, they can pick up the phone, they can call him and say, hey, like, is this guy really legit? Is this guy really, do you know him? Is he trustworthy or whatnot? And it really helps. So more than just the rank, I think lineage, I know a lot of time, especially now in capoeira, things are getting shaken up. People are like shrugging off their teachers for one reason or another, sometimes good reasons, sometimes not so good reasons. But in my trajectory, I've really found myself, or I consider myself fortunate to be in the group that I am and be able to have the backing and the relationship with Mestre Acordeon to to continue, because that's what kind of helps the imposter syndrome a little bit. Like, well, maybe I don't have confidence in myself, but who has a better perspective of the overall capoeira community than Mestre Corjon? And if he said I deserve this, then maybe I should sit down, shut up, and trust him.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, no, I like it. Yeah, that's definitely, you know, something. So, you know, in the Kenpo world, and, you know, hopefully the listeners are not going to freak out, but there's a little bit of drama in politics in regards to rank. And, you know, there are people out there that have a rank that, you know, others think, yeah, maybe you shouldn't have that rank. And, you know, there's a lot of infighting about that. And in capoeira, you know, I'm sure it exists in capoeira as well. But I think it comes up kind of less because it's more community, getting the rank is more based on the community and your contribution to the community more so than, oh, I gotta, you know, take a test and you know, get graded. And it's like, no, it's like, what are you doing, you know, in regards to teaching and spreading the art? And then that's when, you know, the hires up say, okay, we're gonna give you this rank, or, you know, we're gonna recognize you with this position. And so I always find that much more satisfying in regards to dealing with rank and stuff. So, you know, if they say it, you know, you earned it. And, you know, I've seen what you've been doing all of these years, and yeah, you definitely deserve it. So no need for imposter syndrome there. You've definitely earned it. So so that's great. So typically at this point we kind of hit what I call the lightning round, but since that's Kenpo focused, it doesn't really apply to capoeira because we don't have forms and things like that. So I'm going to change it up a little bit, and you know, based on the time that we're recording here, I'll go ahead and throw something current in there. Do you have any thoughts on the upcoming Tyson Jake Paul fight?
My thoughts on the Tyson Jake Paul fight. I think it's going to be incredibly entertaining. And that's one thing that both of these fighters are really good at is hype, getting people in seats, getting people's eyeballs on the channel for something to happen. I really wish I could cultivate the ability to build hype to that level, because if I was able to put a seed in somebody's brain and make them like really, really want to go to capoeira class, I would take that class. You know, I would find whatever it is to tap into these guys' abilities to make people want to talk about it, you know, want to be there, want to see it. And, you know, and people want to see it for different reasons. There's some people that want to see Jake Paul get knocked out in the first 30 seconds, you know. Other people want to see how, you know, how somebody 60 plus does in the ring. So like, yeah, people are watching for different reasons. I think it's going to be exciting. I'm hoping it's exciting. I hope it's not just like 8 rounds of watching people do bad dancing. But at that point it's irrelevant, right? Cause they've already sold the tickets. They've already gotten us. Yeah, tuned in.
Yeah, no, I described it. I described it as I see it as a circus sideshow, and you know, they're you know, of course the money is gonna be a big thing, and yeah, they're doing it for entertainment, and I would be very surprised if either one of them is really, really taking this serious. And you know, I said that they're both gonna, you know, come away with this, and you know, they're not, neither one of them is gonna want to have their legacy tarnished. You know, especially Tyson. It's like, you know, oh, you know, you get beat by a YouTuber or whatever. You know, yeah, I don't think he wants that. And you know,
right.
And then you know, Paul, he gets to, you know, win, lose or draw, he gets to say, oh well, you know, I stood toe to toe with Tyson. And so, yeah, it's
yeah, he's won already.
You know, yeah.
If he gets knocked out, he's like, what do you expect? It's Tyson.
Yeah, exactly.
But if it's anything better than that, then he's never had trouble speaking his mind or touting himself. So I'm sure he'll have plenty of ammunition after this.
So yeah, it'll be fun to see. So we'll see how that goes. So yeah, I think we're gonna close out our time today here. I thank you so much for being on. Now is your time for shameless self-promotion. So you can plug anything you want or anything else that you want to say before we close out here. You've got the floor, and yeah, take it away.
All right. Well, I'd like to plug the Contramestre Vagalumi special brand of eyeglasses. I think everybody should go out and buy them. I'm kidding. I'm joking. I don't have any merch. If I had merch, I'd be doing good. No, we're going to have an event in El Paso, Texas. If you are in the Southwest, try to come out. That would be great. It's going to be Martin Luther King Jr. weekend, January 17th through the 19th. And if for some reason you're listening to this podcast and it's not in the year of 2024 or early 2025, our event is almost always going to be on Martin Luther King Jr. weekend. So just look at the calendar, find out when that weekend is, and come check us out. El Paso is pretty nice in January. So if you're in part of the country that gets a lot of snow, gets a lot of ice, you can come snowbird for a weekend in the Southwest, and it'll be pretty tall. It'll be more tolerable than the North. I'll guarantee you that. And Texas, I mean, you know, we're El Paso's a little closer to LA than it is to Houston, but that doesn't mean that other people in Texas shouldn't make the drive. You guys come out here and see us. We'd love to have you and throw some kicks, have a little bachipapo, and share some time. And I also want to shout out to all your listeners, the people that are listening. I think it's good. I'm the kind of person that I think you should support local. And so if you're listening to this podcast, good on you. Keep supporting, because who knows, it could blow up and you don't want to be late on the train. And hopefully you heard something here that you can take with you. Whatever martial art you're doing, choose your season, take care of your body, and find balance, not only in your martial art, but in relationship to your life. I'm not saying stop your martial art and do your life. I'm talking about weaving your martial art into your life in such a way that it makes your entire life smoother. I think it'll help you go a long way.
All right. Yeah, no, again, thank you. Thank you so much for being on, and Can't wait to get this out to the listeners, and we'll definitely talk soon. I'm gonna do my best to make it out to the event in January. So I know I keep missing it out, but I'm going to make you a high priority. So definitely want to get out there and share some good times. So. Yeah, thank you again. Thanks. And we'll chat soon.
This has been fun. We'll have to do it again.
Oh, for sure. All right, well, thank you. Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.